From the Missouri School of Journalism, welcome to Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. Christianity is the world's largest religion and has been for centuries. But over the past 100 years, the human geography of Christianity has changed dramatically. In 1910, over 80% of the world's Christians lived in Europe or North America. By next year, only about a third of the world's Christians will live on those two continents. That's because of a boom in the number of Christians in the developing world, especially in Africa and Asia. Now, Christianity spread through the work of missionaries. Now, historically, these were typically European or American men, like the famed British missionary David Livingstone, who explored huge swaths of Africa seeking converts in the 19th century. But as the rise of secularism has emptied churches in Europe and North America, the flow of missionaries has begun to reverse. Thousands of Christians from places like the Philippines, Brazil, and Nigeria now travel to Europe and North America seeking to plant or grow churches among non-believers. By one estimate, in 2015, Africa alone was the source of 27,400 missionaries. So on this edition of Global Journalist, we're going to talk about the rise of what some call reverse missionaries. In a few minutes, we'll speak with some experts who have been tracking this phenomenon. But first, we're going to bring in a couple of Africans now working to spread the Christian faith in Europe. Up first, we're going to bring in Frank Coyne. He's a Kenyan minister who moved with his family to Germany 6 months ago. He's now a youth minister at St. Marian's Lutheran Church in the town of Wittenberg, Germany. Frank, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. You are from Nairobi, Kenya, and were in a church there. Tell us about how you got interested in Germany.
Well, apart from being a missionary and a youth minister, I'm also a musician, and I've been a musician in church circles for many years. In 2005, a group of friends and I, you know, we had a band and we traveled to Germany. We came to, you know, Berlin and the surrounding places, and we had some concerts together with some young German, you know, young people. And that was the beginning of my interest in global missions and reaching out to other cultures with a message of Christ and hope and peace. And we had a very successful run. And since then, the project has grown, and it's called the Kenya Music Project. Now it's 11 years on. What we started as a one-off, you know, one year, 1 6-week visit, has now become something that happens every 2 years, and that we've been able to reach a lot of young people here in Germany, and they also come to Kenya and experience the, you know, the growth of the church and the joy of Christianity back at home.
So music really provided an entryway for you then, but how did the Lutheran Church come to recruit you to come to Wittenberg?
Actually, it all started with, even then, when we started the project, we were invited by the Lutheran Church, which is, you know, the largest congregation here in Germany. Some call it the state church, or, you know, so it has, the Lutheran Church has a lot of influence and respect among Germans. And so the opinion from the Lutheran Church is taken seriously by the local people here. And so the fact that we came to Germany, you know, by the invitation of the Lutheran Church gave us a lot of legitimacy to be here. And so we had one of the guys who we came with in 2005, who has been here for 6 years, working with a group of young people in the Berlin region, in the church district in Brandenburg. And the Wittenberg Church, St. Marian, the Mother Church of Reformation, one of the pastors knew about our project. He's called Pastor Alexander Gath. He's an author, and he writes and talks a lot about bringing Christianity back to a post-modern Germany. And he requested my friend in Brandenburg if he could make contact with someone from home who can come and help him start youth projects through music that we can use as a vehicle to do missionary work among the young people here in Wittenberg. And so that's how I got contacted, and I came here last year, that is 2017, actually, during the Reformation year, for a short while, had discussions with the church, and we said yes, and my family and I moved here last year in August.
Well, sure. Well, you are in Wittenberg, which was the home of Martin Luther. He was the German monk who lived 500 years ago, credited with launching the Protestant Reformation. It's a place that was once a hotbed of Christian belief, Christian activity. But in today's Germany, something like 37% of people are non-religious, non-sectarian. Nearly half of people under 30 in Germany say they have no religion. So, I mean, like other Christians in Europe, it's becoming a post, like other countries in Europe, it's becoming a post-Christian country. I mean, do you see that these people are ripe for conversion, for implanting Christian faith in them? Or do you view many of them as a lost cause, essentially?
That's a very interesting question, because when I look at the people here, especially, let me start by something that is a fact, that Wittenberg is in Lower Saxony, or Saxony-Anhalt, as it's called, and it has one of the lowest population of Christianity, of Christians in Germany and in most of Europe. The older people we have, older people who are still, you know, holding on to the Christian faith or interested in the Christian religion, but a lot of the younger families and young people did not inherit any Christianity, or the Christian heritage wasn't passed down to them, and so that's a big problem. But we think that it's a good time to have that conversation with especially young people, because the church has very traditional services, the church has very, you know, old liturgy, and the young people are not interested in that. But if we think that if we have this kind of conversations where we bring modern music and pop culture, that Christian pop culture, things that they can relate to, I think that way we're able to have successful conversations with them. So I think it's right to have conversations, and mostly it will be through relationships and projects that are interesting for young people, especially young people here.
Well, Frank, talk to us about some of the challenges that you've experienced as a Kenyan missionary in Germany.
Oh, well, the first one for me would be the isolation. You know, we arrived here. It's not my first time in Germany. I've visited Germany many times before, but I've never been to this part of Germany, in Wittenberg. This is deep in the east of Germany. And one of them is isolation, just coming here and, you know, I'm the only Kenyan in the church circle of St. Marian. I have been received well, but, you know, the culture is different. And so isolation is one of them. The second challenge is just the skepticism that sometimes, you know, you can sense the skepticism among, you know, among the people here, that is anything going to come out of this? You know, we have had conversations where people say, but where are you going to get the young people? And I tell them, I see the young people in schools. You know, I live near a school, and I see lots of young people with Bluetooth boom boxes playing music. And I think, wow, these are the guys I need to approach. I think the other challenge is dealing with the skepticism from a post-communism culture, because East Germany was under the communist rule. And so the way they think, the way they were cultured by the communist rule is you just work, you reason, and church did not have a place. And so for them to feel that the church plays an important role, I think that has to be told again. And I think when we come with our African eyes, or, you know, from a different culture, and we can see how rich the history of the church is, then we can point that to them and tell them, you guys have a heritage that you can go back to and build communities of faith and joy.
Well, Frank, we're out of time, but thank you so much for sharing your story with us.
Yeah, thank you.
A reminder that this is Global Journalist. On today's program, we're talking about the growing phenomenon of reverse missionaries, or Christians from the global south coming to North America and Europe to spread their faith and convert non-believers. We just spoke with the Kenyan minister, Frank Koine, in Germany. To hear more about another African missionary's experience working in Europe, we're pleased to be joined by Brenda Amondi. Her church in Kenya sent her to London 3 years ago to spread her faith. She's now a youth and community worker at St. Luke's Earl's Court Anglican Church in London. Brenda, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, Brenda, talk to us, if you would, about your home church in Kenya, Nairobi Chapel, which did help sponsor you to come to the UK. Why is it that your home church saw that planting churches in Europe is an important mission?
Nairobi Chapel, we have one of our main goals, or other visions for the church, is to plant 300 churches by 2020. And out of those 300 churches, 10 of them are to be gateway cities churches. And London being one of the gateway cities, so that's why it was in the plans. And it's one of those cities that you get the rest of the world in one space. So we saw it as an advantage point to really target London as one of the gateway cities we would like to plant churches and spread the gospel of Christ from then onwards.
Oh, and Brenda, talk to us about the church where you're working now, St. Luke's in London, in central London. How is it different from the church from which you came?
So St. Luke's Ascot is an Anglican church. So one of the partners with church planting is the Anglican church, which is really, it's one of the churches that has a big say with what happens in the country. Be it economically or politically or socially. So
I mean, this is true historically, Brenda. But I think, you know, there's some predictions that the Anglican Church, I mean, it will essentially die out within 40 or 50 years because it's been shrinking so rapidly.
I think when you look at it from a general point of view, that's very true. Because since we came, a lot of churches have been closing down because there are no people to go into these churches, and these are beautiful buildings. So sometimes like the Church of England sees it as to preserve the building. They sell them, but they say do not change the structure of the building because of the hope that eventually Christianity will be rekindled in this country. But if you get in and if you get on the ground, you actually see that there are people who have a desire to really rekindle Christianity in this land. And it's a very slow process, being a very post-Christian culture, and people really, they know about God, but it's like they are done with that part of God. They really want to associate with something or really nothing at all. And I'd say one of the reasons is that Christianity has been very much liberalized. It's become a convenient religion. And some people see it as if it's not Christianity in the sense that they knew it from way back, then they'd rather not really associate with it. They want the pure Christianity or nothing at all, which is really something that is what we're trying to get back to the basics of
Christianity. One of the things that I wanted to ask you about was, there are many in cities like London, elsewhere in Europe, in North America, there are many diaspora churches where people from different countries in Africa, from Philippines, where migrant communities essentially worship. But it sounds like your church, intentionally didn't choose to send you to one of these diaspora churches, but to one, you know, which is basically populated by British indigenous people, if you will.
Yes. Because the disadvantage with that is you get there only Kenyan churches with Kenyan who are living here, and it leaves out a big part of the people who should be really be ministered to from this culture. And the same with the Chinese churches and Korean churches. They become Korean churches in London, which doesn't really help much with the people who are living here. So when they go to these churches, they feel very much left out and out of place, really, because it's your land and it's your territory, but other people have come and occupy that territory, leaving you out of the whole equation.
Well, I want to ask you just a little bit about some of the historical context here. As a Kenyan missionary to Britain, obviously Kenya was Christianized in large part by British missionaries. In fact, there's a famous quote from Kenya's first president, Jomo Kenyatta. He said, "When the missionaries arrived, the Africans had the land and the missionaries had the Bible. They taught us how to pray with our eyes closed. When we opened them, they had the land and we had the Bible." So there's this whole historical context of colonialism that has been wrapped up in this sort of missionary relationship between the two countries. How does that sort of shape what you do now?
And interesting enough, that was one of the big questions that I got asked when I came here in 2016, is how does that inform my attitude of being a missionary in England and in London, seeing that they colonized us? And I think it's something that personally you have to come into, you have to make peace with that and really do missionary from a point of forgiveness. It may be our forefathers, and I may not really know how the situation was, but it's informed my culture and how I carry myself around British people and how I do work here. So I'd say it was a big, it was one of the big challenges I had to really come into terms with and do ministry really from a point of forgiveness from me and the history that informs my culture and coming as a missionary to this land, and really getting past it. So it really does inform your attitude subconsciously, but you have to really make peace with it and forgive.
Well, Brenda Amandi, thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
Thank you very much.
We'll remind you that you're tuned in to Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. On today's program, we're talking about the rise of reverse missionaries. These are Christians from the Global South, from countries that were often colonized and Christianized by Europeans, who are now traveling to Europe and North America to try to revive the Christian faith in those places. If you're interested in more Global Journalists, check us out online at globaljournalist.org. There you can find our archives and additional coverage of underreported international news and human rights issues. You can also like us on Facebook, where we live stream, follow us on Twitter, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, or see our videocast on YouTube. To expand our discussion now, we're going to bring in two people who have been following this phenomenon closely. Joining us from Boston is Todd Johnson. He's the director of the Center for the Study of Global Christianity at the Gordon Conwell Theological Seminary. Todd, welcome.
Thank you.
Also with us from Belfast in Northern Ireland is Eric Morier-Genaud. He's a senior lecturer in history who's researched this topic at Queen's University, Belfast. Eric, welcome.
Thank you.
Well, Todd, if I could start with you, help us understand some of the larger demographic forces that are driving this phenomenon. How has the picture of global Christianity changed over the last several decades?
Yes, as you said at the beginning, only 100 years ago, the vast majority of Christians were Europeans, North Americans. And of course, now we talk about the shift of Christianity to the global South, and in the vast majority now, Christians in Africa, Asia, Latin America, outnumbering Christians in the North. But I think what's unusual and new now, of course, is the increased contact, you might say, between the South and the North. And some of it, a lot of it really is quite natural. It's those same lines of, colonial power work back the other way. So even in the two interviews we heard, from Kenya. The British, of course, as you said, were very active in Kenya, and so were Germans in East Africa. And now Kenyans are going back to Europe along those natural lines, often through economic migration or even as refugees. And then they encounter Christianity there, but they also encounter secularization. And I think that starts to explain how a lot of this got started, is through those natural lines of contact.
Well, Eric Morier, if I could bring you in, you talk about three sort of powerhouse sources of reverse missionary work, if you will. Where are these places? Why do they send so many missionaries overseas?
Well, I suppose the biggest countries sending missionaries is to the global north would be probably Korea, Nigeria, Ghana as well, and I might be missing some of the countries. They are not only sending missionaries to the north, they're actually sending a lot of missionaries to the south as well. Nigerians are actually working missions across the continent, right down to South Africa, Mozambique, and they are working globally. Some of these churches are actually mega churches. They're spreading all over. The country I missed was Brazil, of course, which has a lot of transnational and global churches expanding all over the world, in fact. And they are becoming huge and very visible in all corners of Europe, and I presume the US as well. And they are making Christianity quite diverse, quite different, maybe more colorful indeed. And that leads to all sorts of debates. And I think the issue of reverse mission is precisely about trying to frame a discussion about how useful and how that kind of mission work can be done or not.
And Todd Johnson, talk to us about sort of the historical roots of this idea. How long has this phenomenon been happening?
Well, the movement of people, of course, goes back a long time. There were Kenyans in UK in the 1950s, and of course after that. So people from the global south have been living in the north for a long time, but I think this phenomenon of reverse mission is generally considered to be more recent, maybe in the 1990s forward, because there's an intentionality there, and part of it is this encounter, I think, with secularization and empty churches, which we've heard already. That's where the motivation comes. So you might go and live in London or in Germany for economic reasons, but then you begin to notice the circumstance of the people, and then mission can follow that. And a lot of these Christians from the Global South initially just had their own churches, but again, began to reach out beyond their own people pretty quickly after having arrived in these different locations in the north.
And Eric, if I could ask you, is this a phenomenon that can be understood in terms of sort of supply and demand, like sort of in the same way you might look at other factors from an economic point of view, like the U.S. doesn't have enough software engineers, so it imports them from other countries. It doesn't have enough farm laborers, so it imports them from other countries. In this sense, maybe it also doesn't have enough Christian religious leaders, so it imports them from other countries. Is that a fair way of talking about this?
To some extent, yes. It is. I think the aspect which is important is a lot of these Christianities in the South have become very mature. And from the 1970s, they made an explicit choice to actually engage in missionary activity. In 1971, 72, 73, there was a call for moratorium on missionaries from the global north. And from then on, churches from Latin America, Asia, and Africa decided that they would take over the missionary task for their continent, their country. And that became basically their involvement in mission. And it has become very visible, as Todd was saying, in the 1990s. But there's been a lot of debates, not least in the World Council of Churches, about how whether the moratorium from northern missionaries was acceptable or not, and then how we could work together. In 2013, the World Council of Churches, after much debate, has agreed that actually the program of mission should be working together. So north and south should work together to actually convert the world. So it's a supply and demand is a historical element which has to do with decolonization and is a fact that the Christianities in the South have become mature and have decided to take on over the missionary mission.
Well, Todd Johnson, let me ask you about the Roman Catholic Church in particular, which for decades has had a shortage of priests in North America and Europe and has been, you know, essentially importing them from elsewhere in the world. How has this sort of reverse mission work of priests from the global south, how has it shaped the Catholic Church in Europe and North America?
Yeah, it's a really good point. And I think it isn't just filling vocations, it's actually changing how people think about the faith. You know, one thing is that Christianity in the global south in general is much more community-oriented. And so when it comes to the West, whether it be the United States or Europe, it encounters a highly individualistic society, both Christianity and in the secular sense. And so that's one way in which the Global South has been perhaps helping in the Global North, is to bring a deeper sense of community and which is actually more compatible with Christianity than highly individualistic Christianity, and also materialism, which is somewhat rampant in the north. Priests from the Philippines or Brazil or from Nigeria or Ghana are certainly bringing a different view of how you should interact with economic growth and that sort of a thing.
Well, Eric, you've written about sort of just some of the controversy surrounding this idea of what a reverse missionary is. And we heard Brenda talking about this earlier as well. I mean, very oftentimes, these countries in the global south were Christianized in a coercive manner during the colonial period, sometimes, at, you know, basically at the point of a gun barrel. So talk to us about how that influences sort of our views of Christian mission work today.
Yes, the term reverse mission is quite problematic, and I think it is theological, moral, and it is a way in many respect to frame the discourse in saying, well, we came to you and now you coming to us, and that implies certain rules and regulations, certain ways you can do, and then you start a debate about the daughter churches, as some would say, coming back and how they can operate. The reality is reverse missionaries or missionaries coming to the north or priests and pastors coming to the north who may come for a immigration church, a diaspora church, come and they're not always welcome. Some issues are about theology. Some mainstream churches are not happy to see these African or Asian Pentecostal churches coming. Some issues are more social, sometimes racial, and they're not very happy to see an African pastor heading their congregation. And that idea of arguing that it is reverse mission kind of puts the discussion in a moral framework, which is not only negative. Some missionaries from the global south say, well, we are doing reverse mission. We're doing the same as you did 100 years ago, and that gives us rights to come and do it. So there's a lot of discussion about who can do what, where, whether immigration is good, whether Pentecostalism is acceptable in a country like which is more secular or dominated by liberal churches like Germany. And all these discussions are very often driven or operated under this label of reverse mission, which is, I think, reducing very often the discussion in kind of a moral way. I think diaspora churches, for example, are a very different issue. Very often they don't engage in missionary work. So we're talking about African, for example, working with African in London, in Belfast, in Germany, wherever it may be. So it's a fascinating topic, but not always discussed in a very neutral way. Very often it is about framing.
Well, Eric, I don't mean to cut you off, but we are short on time, and Todd, with just about 30 seconds left, how do you see this issue sort of shaping Christianity over the next couple decades?
Yeah, I think it's actually going to have a very important impact, because Christianity is truly global now, and even people in the West probably would benefit greatly from encountering Christianity that has this very global, non-Western character to it, especially in the light of nationalism and anti-immigrant sentiment. This is a big challenge for Christians in the global North as to how they're going to respond to the movement of people across all these different cultural barriers.
Well, we're out of time for this edition of Global Journalist, a production of the Reynolds Journalism Institute at the Missouri School of Journalism and KBIA, Mid-Missouri Public Radio. Many thanks to Frank Coyne, Brenda Amandi, Todd Johnson, and Eric Morier-Jeannot for joining us. Our assistant producers this week are Seth Bodine, Lara Cumming, and Michelle Stoddard. Edom Kasai is our supervising producer, and Grace Lett is visual editor. Aaron Hay is audio engineer. Travis McMillan is director. For all of us at Global Journalist, I'm Jason McClure. We'll close with some gospel music from our guest Frank Coyne, a Kenyan missionary in Germany.